Facing challenges and overcoming setbacks is part of doing business. Whether you have the expertise to survive them or not could mean the difference between success or failure. Welcome to We Are Women, featuring revealing conversations that provide invaluable insights into the success secrets of female masterminds. A must listen for every entrepreneurial woman. Now here's your host, Janine Vosper.
Welcome to this episode of the We Are Women podcast. I have the gorgeous Anna Bellman with me. Now, Anna is a sexual intimacy expert, and she operates out of China, where her focus lies in guiding women to have long-lasting, fulfilled sexual and intimate relationships without anxiety and shame. Her coaching program, Get Your Orgasm Back, has helped women around the world regain a positive body image and discover their wants and desire. And importantly, it saves some marriages. She's helped over 250 clients shifting their mindset about self-sabotaging and self-empowering by integrating coaching approaches, psychological theories, and NLP in all of her coaching. Additionally to coaching and educating on sexual intimacy, she established herself as an international speaker and the go-to mental health specialist for expats in Shenyang. Welcome, Anna. I mentioned just before we started, we had a little bit of a chat, that I've got a bit of a croaky voice today and an odd cough, so I might put my mute on if I need to cough at all. But I'm so pleased that you are with me. We've been communicating for a little while, and it was such an interesting topic. I wanted you here.
Well, hello, and thank you for the lovely introduction, first of all. And like I said to you before, I'm happy to fill the time by speaking.
Excellent. So why are you in China? I suppose that's an obvious question, but people watching and listening will be thinking, well, it's not a Chinese accent if they're listening and viewing you. Obviously, it's not. So what brought you to China?
Well, I came for love. I have a partner, and about 4 years ago, he got a job offer. And at the time, we lived in England, and I made the conscious decision to give everything up and start from scratch here in China. So that actually brings me to the first point, to make that decision, make it your decision to say, this is what I'm going to do, because I wanted to protect myself from having these moments where I would fall into that trap to say, I did it for you.
Yeah.
I said, no, I've done this. I've did it for me. I wanted to be with you, and this is what I decided to do.
That's a really important factor. I had a really good long conversation with somebody this week talking about choices and the choices that we make, and recognizing that they are our choices. So well done with that, because especially when you move to a different country and, you know, there's COVID lockdowns, the whole world is very, very different than what you probably would have experienced if you were back in England. And so to recognize, well, this is what I chose to do. I'm accepting of it. Good job.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. It's proven well so far.
that's great. Obviously, though, this isn't a topic that you just go, oh, this is what I'm going to teach on. You know, I want to know some background into you and what brought you into going, this is something, I think it's so important. I think it's a really vital topic, but it's not something that's talked about very often. And it's also, why you, and what got you into it?
Well, I can say, why not me?
So, well, there you go.
I think there multiple things came together. On the one hand, I've always been very open to talk about sexuality, about sex, about intimacy, about feelings, about relationships. I've always had that since I can remember, since I had my first relationship, since I had girlfriends and we were talking about it. So it's always been natural to talk about it. And I've always loved to explain why I did stuff in my relationship. Why did I communicate in that way or the other way, or just listening to people and make them aware how important it is to talk, to, but also to be true to yourself. So I think that was a preposition, you could say. Yeah. I was given. But back in England, I was working as a coach already. So I have my experience in how it is to be a coach. And coming to China, I couldn't get a visa to work in that field. So I started as an English teacher. But I've noticed I missed it so, so much. And I found a way to set up my own business here to finally pursue that path again, to coach, to help people, to make sure that they can be the best they could be. And I was doing it, I was helping people. And then one morning, it was this typical, you're in the shower, get out of the shower, and then this epiphany comes and says, all these tools, they work so amazing in every area of your clients. Like, why wouldn't they work in the bedroom? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, let's see, get down to business. Because I always had this, or not always, I trained myself to have the need to have these amazing, vivid fantasies when I masturbate. And it became a chore. My body wasn't relaxed. My body wasn't like filled with endorphins. It was probably, but not on an obvious scale. It was more this tension of, oh my God, I need to keep that fantasy. I need to keep going. Nothing can come in between, and panicking. Mm-hmm. It wasn't enjoyable. So I thought, let's try this. So I used two of my tools that I thought they might help. And they helped. I had an amazing orgasm and I got out of it and I thought, I need to tell the world about this. I need to let women and men know that whatever's going on in your intimate sexual life, I'm here and I know how to help you. So whatever your reason is for not having that fulfilled intimate and sexual life with your relationship with yourself, there might be, the reason might be that it's just in your mind. And I know how to unblock that. So sure. Get unstuck.
Yeah, that. Very, very interesting. So that's come a long way. It is interesting as a coach that, and I think a lot of people in business do this anyway, but the shower is a great place to get these epiphanies, as you said. I know multiple times you've gone, oh, that's what I'm... So, yes, so if you're looking for new ideas, take a shower, let everything just not think about things and ideas will come to you. Another recommendation. Your program there, Get Your Orgasm Back, that includes those steps that you were using for coaching.
Well, these are tools, so I use tools. Different, okay. Depending on the client, depending on what the current situation is. But there are certain things that I'm going through. And the main point is your mindset, because that's where it starts. Mm-hmm. And your mind is just your thoughts. They create or break your reality. Let's put it that way. They either give you a happy relationship with yourself mainly, or they give you a horrible experience with yourself. And that's where we start. We start with the mindset too. That inner voice, that self-sabotaging voice that so many of us have, that keeps you away from having this intimate relationship, that keeps you away from showing off your body, that keeps you away from going into a relationship open-minded because you've been hurt or whatever the reason is, but your mind is just constantly going. And I teach my clients how to quieten that voice and what to use instead, how to talk to yourself. NLP is a brilliant tool to get deeper into your subconscious. And
I use NLP as well, but just for those listening that don't understand what NLP is, can you explain?
Well, NLP goes into so your thoughts are your consciousness, and NLP goes into your subconsciousness. I mainly use visualizations, because I find they are brilliant for the work that I do. Because usually most of the people, they love to imagine things. They have this visual preference. So that's what we do. And with that, we can go much deeper than just thinking. we go into the subconsciousness and can move things around. We switch the switch.
The switch.
It's the switch. We reconnect how your brain worked before, or how you thought, perceived things, and we give it a new place and how to do that.
And, you know, a lot of that inner critic, I often talk about it for people in the workplace, whether they're going for promotions or they don't believe that they have the skills as a business person that somebody else might have, and who are they to try and promote themselves. But I've never thought about it really as, and it is that self-belief and the body image, but I've never even associated it with the bedroom activity as well.
But most of my clients, at least the female ones, one of the main reasons they don't have sex, they don't have intercourse, they don't have intimacy is because they are ashamed of their body. And that's because they think they might not be attractive. They think their partner might not think they are attractive. So it's that voice that tells you, oh, no, with that body, you can't get undressed. With that body, you need to turn the lights off, whatever it is. So it's that inner critic that gives you all of these, of the input, and you're so used to it. I mean, from your work, you probably know that from your clients, they are so used to believing that, to listen to it, and they identify themselves with that voice and just say, this is me. But it's not. I always tell them, this is not you. This is just part of you. It's one part that can be quiet, and we don't want to get rid of it because it's survival, but we want to quieten it and let, or give space then to the positive self-talk.
And asking that voice at the time is this serving me? Now that's another thing as well, isn't it? You know, that what the voice is telling you is, and that's something in the scope that I do is for them to, for people to ask, but is that belief serving me? And
yeah,
because really to analyze that.
Yeah, because our brains are they are programmed to answer questions. So yeah. Whatever you, yeah, and that's why so many ask, why me? Why isn't this happening? Why? And your brain just cramps in your subconscious anywhere to find the reasons, find the answer. So with that, is this serving me? It's just like, oh, I can't find proof that this is good for you. No, so no.
Yeah, interesting. I remember I did a speech quite a few years ago about positivity and negativity, and that, you know, we have between 30 to 80,000 thoughts a day, and the part of that was 80% of them are negative. And I thought, well, I haven't got that high percentage, so someone's got mine as well. They haven't got just their 80%. They've got other people. So that, but it very crowded and limiting in there then, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think most of the time you're not aware what is a negative thought. That's the thing. It's usually how you word things, how you would speak to others, how the words that you use when you speak. That's quite an obvious indicator of how do you talk to yourself in your mind. And many people say a lot of I can't, I must, I should, I
should.
Need.
Yeah, exactly. I often talk about people shooting all over themselves. Because it changes, you know, if you're, you know, talking about, well, I should feel like I want to be intimate with my partner. I should feel that I can get undressed. So then that adds that shame that you were talking about, doesn't it? And it's heavy, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the pressure that you put on yourself. That's like, I should, but I don't. Oh my God. And then, yeah.
I one of the tools I get my clients to use is give that voice, that subconscious voice, a voice. And my usual suggestion is something like Donald Duck or something that is quite comical, because really, how can you listen to a voice that's really comical? And it's quite powerful when you change that up. Yeah.
What I do is I visualize it, and then they find out the name. So they have this, not just now a voice, but that's like we personalize, or we, how do you say that in English? We make a person out of that voice. So mm-hmm. It becomes its own entity, and it's like, this is not me. This is just.
Yes, I heard someone do a presentation recently, and that's what they suggested that they do also, is to give that critical voice a personality. And they chose somebody that they hadn't liked at school, and they used that person's name because they thought, I'm not going to listen to that person anyway. So it was really interesting that they that was their suggestion, was exactly what you said. Make it an identity, give it a name, and then thinking about, am I listening to this person? Well, no, not really.
The thing is, I'm more on the positive flow to give compassion to that voice.
Okay.
Say, thank you for looking out for me. I got this. I'm strong,
I like that.
Strong enough. I appreciate you looking after me, but I've got this. Yeah, so
I like that. That's a nice slant on that. But I think the main thing, though, out of all of that is to be aware that it is just a subconscious thought. It's not reality.
Exactly. Yeah. It's just becoming aware of, here it is again. Here we go again. I'm doing it again. Okay. I've noticed it. And that's okay. The thing is, because many, I guess you know that at the beginning when you work with your clients, they beat themselves up because they don't notice the voice. They are not aware of it being there so many times. But it takes time. It just takes so much time to get used to their voice and to really figure out, this is now that voice again. This is the inner critic talking, and this is not me.
Yes. Yeah. It does make a big difference too. It's like anything. You know, you see some people's behavior, you know, they aggressive on the road, or they do something that you think that's really disrespectful for other people. It's then stepping into the space, remembering that's the best they can do, because they don't know different behavior that is more acceptable to society. I suppose I'll put that out, but it's different behavior that has a more positive outcome, because they just don't know. It's not until they know that they have a choice to do things differently, then they can choose then to change the behavior.
Yeah,
I find that it's one of the things, you know. Sometimes you see something, somebody do something, and you go, "Oh, why would somebody do that?" And to be able to step back and then recognize that they don't know they've got choices. They just run automatic. Yeah. So that shame around the body perception, is that something that, you know, starts from a certain age, or is it, you know, somebody's whispered in it to them at some stage that that's a problem? Or, you know, I imagine there's a whole lot of different things that come up.
It happens anytime. So whenever, there can be, of course, it can be a trauma from childhood, but it can also happen later when you have your first boyfriend maybe, and you get undressed for the first time in front of a boy and they laugh at you, and here we go. Now the shame is there. So it can happen at any time, but it can also be on top of other events that happened in your life. Because we know that you have the most significant trauma happens in your childhood, and whatever happens after is just a topping on that, and creates more behavior that might not be preferable or helpful to yourself.
Yes, so something happens, then it's reinforced and reinforced, and then it becomes the norm for that person because of that. It can be something without thought, can't it, that somebody says, but it's the body subconscious picks up on it, and it's.
Yeah, it can be a look, it can be just a word, it can be anything. Yeah, it really, anything can be a trigger.
Yeah. So if you're working with somebody, how do you work with them so that they shift that mindset, if that particularly the shame about body image?
Well, the first part is to learn and meet and be aware of that inner critic. So with that, when you get into the flow of doing that, say 50% is already done, because that quiets, so you can look into the mirror with a quiet mind, without judgment about your body. But on the other hand, I also love to move away from the body just as something you look at, but also come back to that amazing multifunctional machine that it actually is. So what your body does on a day-to-day basis, all the time, every time, and also the other things, because there are so many things what your brain does, it focuses on the negative. So when you look in the mirror, you focus on something that you don't like. But there's always something that you do like.
Mm-hmm.
Don't need to love it. That's not the point. It's just something that you look at and say, that's nice. And that can be, I say to my client, that can be anything. That can be the shape of your fingernails. That can be the softness of your skin, the shape of your eyebrows, whatever it is. Let's remember those parts.
That's a good point.
Yeah, and when you start focusing on the positives, on the things that you actually do like, you find more and more. And it's we're coming back to the mind again. When you focus on the good things, you see more good things, more things come into your life. But if you focus on the bad parts, that's all what you see.
Most definitely. I am a huge advocate of that. Is what do you want to manifest and what do you want to create in your life, and where is your spotlight of focus? And is it focused on those things that you don't want, that you keep bringing in? I know yesterday I won a raffle prize and someone said, you always win those raffle prizes. So I did say that I wanted to win that prize because my wine fridge was empty. So there we go. It's that manifestation of the, and it, so it's people have often, you know, talk about manifesting things, but I don't think they actually take it to that next level of what you're talking about, is that manifesting those more positive responses to things about themselves.
Well, my belief is what, and my experience is that it's when you want to manifest something, you have that thought, but then usually that inner critic comes up and gives you all the reasons why it shouldn't or couldn't happen. And then it doesn't happen. And then you just get to reconfirm that, I didn't happen there. I knew it wouldn't happen. Yeah, but quiet in that voice.
Yeah.
That's where the true beauty comes in. That's when magic is happening. You quieten that voice, you believe in yourself, because we have to remember it, that we are born happy. Yeah. You don't see a little baby, a toddler walking around feeling ashamed or embarrassed or unhappy. It doesn't happen often. So you are born happy, and that's your natural state. So whatever happens then in the future, in you're growing up, takes away from that natural state. And by getting back to that, by slowly removing those blocks and maybe removing the triggers, healing from the trauma, you come back to that natural state that you were born with. So it's just coming back. It's nothing that you need to learn, or how some say, I want to have that eventually. It's, you had it. It's just remembering.
That interesting point with that, and that's exactly correct, because children who have not, I mean, in the first 12 months, depending, you know, in a normal family, they usually don't have any judgment and they can't, you know, understand things as well, and then after that they can start understanding words and the meaning of those words, and it doesn't take much. I know I'm reading, I've read a book called Jolt, and it's just that, it can be that one instant that's a jolt that the body, the subconscious or unconscious, just goes, oh, okay, so that's how the world is now, and that's the way I'll respond to it. Yeah. It's like we talk, you know, you talk about children learning to walk. They just don't stop after the first time they fall down and go, oh, I'll never do that again. That wasn't a very good exercise to do. You know, they just keep going until they can walk and climb and do whatever they're meant to do. So a very interesting point. So taking this now to the bedroom, not just the body, it's that I'm assuming a lot of it's about communication.
Of course. Everything is about communication, yeah. But before communicating, you need to be aware of what you actually want, because I bet many of your listeners and many women out there have a long list of things that they don't want. Mm-hmm. Maybe in a partner, maybe in themselves, maybe in the bedroom, whatever it is. This is what I don't want, and they can name for an hour what they don't want. But ask them what you want. It's like silence. And that's the thing. But there are a couple of reasons. So one reason is they never thought about what do they want? What is it actually they want in a detailed way? Because when you say, I want to have more intimacy, what does that actually mean? So you need to go into detail to really figure out what does that mean to you. And then we come back to the mind that we think we might not deserve having that. We might not find that person that we can love that way, whatever it is. But then the doubts come back, and the doubts are overshadowing your want. And that's why it's so easy to give all the reasons, all the things that you don't want, because they are coupled with the doubts you have about yourself.
That's a great exercise is to do that, I would imagine, because yeah, it's that what, and then, you know, part of it is what do you love about yourself, as you were saying before. It's going into that positive space. What do you want? I ask that when I'm working with people with business. What is it that you want to create? And I get these blank stares from most people. You know, what is it that is the perfection of what you're doing and to what you want to create? And a lot of people, we all are. We're not game enough to say it exactly, because, you know, who are we to want that?
Yeah.
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 So what is it that Anna wanted to create?
Thought about this, and I want to create a space for women and men where they can feel safe, where they can be themselves, and where they are listened to without judgment for exactly who they are—the good, the bad, and the ugly. That's my mission.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. And that space is, because we are individuals, but it's human nature. We need company. That's, you know, who we are. So as a individual, I'm thinking of some people I know, they seem to have high demands on what they do want. So they, you know, they do have certain things that they, but I'm just wondering whether that's part of the I don't want that exercise as well. It's, yeah, or, you know, people will say, you're just being picky, you're looking for a partner, but that's okay, isn't it?
I don't think it's picky. I think it's fear.
Yeah.
And also maybe from society, like you have to have someone who has a certain status or whatever the society is in. I know it's growing up in Germany, it was all about your house, your car, your career. So get someone who has that established on a high level, then you're okay. Then you must be happy because your partner has that. Now you're happy. So yeah.
And then judging yourself if you're not. I have that now. Then yeah.
Yeah, because it's actually not what you wanted. It's just what you thought you need to have. Yeah, then we come back for I need this, and then the word has slipped my mind. what I want to say is when I have that, then society will accept me as an accomplished person. Because I remember when I was younger. And society told me, I need to get a man, I need to have a house, I need to have children, I need to have that, otherwise I'm not a woman.
Mm.
Mm.
Yes, and that's, then there's judgment on self, and then there's the shame when it doesn't happen, and it's your life ends up different than what you what was society or parents or, friends, family, everyone demanded as an expectation.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that just drives you into, when it comes to intimacy, when you are with a partner that you need to be with to feel accepted by society, chances that the intimacy is lacking are high, very high, because you might resent that person even.
Mm. Yes. So then you've come back to what we were talking about, the choices you made put you in a situation that you are not happy in, and the inability to communicate that either with yourself or with someone else, with your partner, is what is failing then, isn't it?
Mm.
I don't know what it is in England, but I know in Australia it's about 50% of marriages fail. Yeah, that's really high statistics.
But I think
people loved each other prior, and there's a reason that they got married and created other lives usually as well.
I think that's just the official number. I'm pretty sure that's behind closed doors, depending on how you want to look at a marriage.
Mm-hmm.
Might just be now partnerships or just friendships with someone you used to have sex with. I actually don't know the statistics in England or in Germany or in China. I have no idea how the divorce rate is.
Yeah, but I think I'm pretty probably sure. In Western countries it'd probably be pretty much the same, I would imagine. Across the world, yeah.
Mm.
Which means, again, there was people that loved each other, were intimate with each other, and then now it doesn't work out. It's not for the best for them, so that they separate, as opposed to, so as part of, with what you're doing, getting couples together as well, to be able to communicate more effectively. Not as a therapist, but looking at, do you work with couples or prefer that you're working with one person? Because I imagine even when you're working with one person, that person needs to recognize all the things that we've talked about, but it's not much use going back to a relationship where the other person doesn't do that and understand that.
Well, I work with couples as well, so yes, I do that, but I work mainly with them individually, and then we come together every couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
I find you are the change. So when it mm-hmm. happens in your mind, then you already started the change, no matter what your partner is doing. That's my belief, and that's why I want to work with them individually, and then every now and again we come together and say, okay, where are we now? Where are you guys now as a couple?
Mm. Do you find that each member of the couple has a different perception of that?
Yeah.
Yeah. So when you say, how are you going now as a couple, then one might have a completely different perception of what's happening.
Yeah, On the other hand, because we go through the inner critic exercise, because we are aware of that, and because I teach them different communication styles and how to listen properly and what do you want, and all of that, of course, goes back into the relationship. And when they come together as a couple, it's not the first time, is it? So they live their lives together. So when they come together and it's the three of us, it's beautiful to see how from the beginning when you started working with them to a couple of months in, how they now listen and have compassion for each other. And it's not the ego that is there and me, and I need to. It's like we, and I hear you. It's beautiful.
I was going to say that's very rewarding as a coach to have those experiences. That's wonderful. Yeah. And as I said, you know, people get together, so maybe they just forget all of that along the way as life comes on. And the things that when people are under stress, the negative thoughts come out and the judgment comes out of themselves. So
And I mean, you know that as a coach and NLP practitioner, it's an up and down. It's not a linear growth and steady improvement. It's up and down and up and down. That's life. That's what happens. But that's why I prefer to work with my clients for half a year at least, because that gives the client and myself the chance to implement the tools and be very comfortable with the new mindset, the new habits. And then the up and downs still come, but they are not that down anymore. So you don't go that deep into the hole.
And then they've got the tools to be able to, you know, remind each other and remind themselves what they need to be doing as well. Now, we've got three takeaways that we are usually asking. You know, it's a lot of things that we've obviously discussed. But so, Anna, the three takeaways you want people to definitely remember from this conversation.
Well, the first one is about mindset. So whatever you're thinking, remember, it's not you. It's just part of you. And be compassionate with yourself. I know some of us say, talk to yourself like you would talk to your best friend. Well, my best friend tells me that sometimes an idiot. So I don't take that as... like talk to yourself like you would talk to your best friend, but show yourself compassion. And the other one is about your body. Look at your body as this amazing multifunctional machine that is there for you every day, every hour, every second, and is doing such a great work, and there is so much beauty that you can see and also that you can't see, and that is your body. Remember that. And the third one is find out what you want and life will be easier.
Yes, being able to articulate that, but and also listen to your partner as well. That would be an important factor, wouldn't it? Not just what you want, but to listen as well. No, that's great. And I'm very much for that. I keep saying that if people got married and loved each other, there's people like you that can help them stay together if that's the best thing for them, and rather than, you know, quickly getting out because of life stresses, or again, that results back to their own beliefs and choices. I think it's so important what you do. How can people work with you, Anna?
Well, people can find me through my website, anna.com. They can email me, anna@annathelman.com. They can also find me on LinkedIn under Anna Thelman.
And I will have all of those contact details in the show notes as well. And I want to thank you, and thank you for patience with my coughing. For those that are watching the video, we'll see I keep coughing, but I keep muting all of the time each time I've been coughing. But those that have been listening will, you wouldn't have known any difference other than my voice is a bit croaky today. So thank you for your patience with that as well. And I've enjoyed that conversation. I think so much comes back to our thoughts and how we treat ourselves, and then from where how we treat ourselves is then projected on how we treat the world and all the people around us. Yeah, most definitely. Thank you very much, Anna. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
You're welcome. And that's another episode of the We Are Women podcast. I am Janine Vosby, your host. Remember, you can always book a strategy call, a conversation, by going to janinevosper.com. And we can, if I can help you, that's fantastic, because I love doing that, to be able to help people create the businesses of their dreams. And I'll tell you what, if I can't, there's a lot of people that I know who can do exactly that for you. So let's chat. So janinevosper.com. And remember to, if you are watching this on YouTube, to subscribe to the channel so you don't miss a single episode, and subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss out on anything either. I look forward to you listening, watching, joining me next time. Bye-bye.
So, do you feel stuck in a rut in business? Visit speechperfect.com.au and download Janine's free ebook to avoid the 5 most common stumbling blocks women face in business. It's jam-packed full of tips to overcome the barriers that could be holding you back from the success that you dream your business will be. We would love you to leave a review of today's episode and share this podcast with other women in need of entrepreneurial inspiration. Subscribe to the next episode now and join the We Are Women community.